Your line just went down. Production stopped. A supervisor wants answers. And someone's digging through a binder for the maintenance history. Every one of those minutes costs money. And most of the time, that breakdown could have been prevented. That's where MaintainX comes in. MaintainX catches the failure before it happens. Preventative maintenance plans on every key asset to improve reliability. Work orders assigned and tracked right from your phone. Everyone from the floor to the front office is in the loop. Companies on MaintainX have cut unplanned downtime by over 30% and saved thousands on parts and labor every year. See what MaintainX can do for your operation. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
On Reddit, true crime doesn't come from journalists. It comes from the victims, the witnesses, and sometimes the suspects themselves.
Every Tuesday on Crimes of Reddit, we read these posts out loud.
I'm Sabrina Dianaroga.
And I'm Alexis Linkletter. One of us brings the story, the other goes in blind, reacting in real time, just like you.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Crimes of Reddit, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Wow, just another gorgeous afternoon in St. Louis. I think that summer, even though we're not officially in summer, is really starting off in fine fashion. I have no complaints about the weather. I mean, I know that we're using the air conditioner a little bit, but like this morning was chilly. Tomorrow morning is going to be chilly. My poor daughter, even though I really shouldn't have any empathy for this, she's got these swim team practices at 7 in the morning. I mean, it was cold this morning at 7 in the morning. It's like in the 50s,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, that's but the part kids, of summer swimming.
The kids can do it, right, Sue?
Yes, they
can. Did you do that when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. Here's what. I would be at camp, and they'd say, okay, we're having swim lessons in the lake.
Yeah.
And that lake, it was Michigan, and it was cold.
Yeah, that's...
And it was, you know, and it's dark. Well, it's not dark out, but the lake is kind of, ugh.
You don't know.
You know, there's no clear pool water.
No, you don't know what sea monsters
Correct.
Are lurking under there,
Correct.
For sure. You know, I was with a friend of mine last night, Ken Dubinsky, at the baseball game. Ken does some of the NIL stuff with some products for Mizzou. He's been on the air before, and we were just kind of talking about... something came up about John Anderson, who is the former ESPN anchor who now is a professor at Mizzou. And I got to know John a little bit a couple of years ago, and he's from the Green Bay area. And I was talking about Door County, which is northeast of Green Bay. It's a peninsula up there in Wisconsin, just about 2 hours north of Milwaukee. And a lot of St. Louis folks go there.
A huge amount.
Because you seek respite in the summer,
yes.
And you have temperatures up there that may be in the 80s, but not very much humidity. And then, you know, where I would stay is what they call the quiet side. So I would be on the Lake Michigan side. And we've gotten away from this because we used to vacation with another family and the kids have all grown up. And we don't take my daughter because we don't have the dynamic with the other family,
right?
And she'd kind of be bored up there doing it. But my point of this is that over the years, I've probably been there, you know, 20 different years in the summer over the course of my life. And there are times when the water is pretty comfortable. And we always go at the same time of year. It was always the end of July.
Oh, smart.
But there were times in the end of July up in Door County where you would get in that water and you go numb. It was that cold.
Yeah.
Now, the kids kind of have, a lot of kids, I think, they're risk averse to some of this stuff.
Mm.
But, I mean, I would only go in waist deep and I couldn't even feel my appendages after that.
Yeah, try that. Try when you're 10 or 11.
And do swim lessons.
Yeah, do swim lessons and jump off the dock into the water.
Well, you know, in this, I don't know how often this even gets discussed anymore, but I'm pretty sure this is what happened with my mom. You know, they used to just throw you in the water and see if you can swim. My mom is terrified.
What?
She's never been able to swim.
Gosh.
I think my grandpa just threw her in. That's what some people used to do.
Oh,
well, no, that's not
goodness.
The way you should teach someone how to swim. So she's never, I don't even think she can swim.
Well, I think that's her father's fault.
Yes.
Yes.
I can say that. All right, let's get a group vote on this here this afternoon, because I think that maybe I'm going to make a case for justification here, even though there potentially might be some violence involved. Hear me out, ladies and gentlemen. So the this is, I think, something we can all relate to if you work in an office or if you ever worked in an office where they have a kitchen or they have a microwave. There are certain rules that kind of should be
unspoken,
in place,
yes,
for what you should be able to microwave. What would become, let's say we're playing the Family Feud here, and we got a list of things, and Sue, let's play the feud. What would be the number one thing?
Fish.
Thank you very much. Ding,
fish.
Ding, ding, ding. Hit that right there.
Yep.
Here's the story here. Holy mackerel. See what they did there in the New York Post?
Oh, my goodness.
A South Carolina police officer was arrested and fired for allegedly aiming his service weapon at a fellow cop for microwaving a fish in the station.
Oh, my
Michael
gosh.
De Blasi, 46, who is a detective with the Myrtle Beach Police Department, former detective, was hit with a charge of pointing and presenting a firearm at a person in the June 2nd incident, according to the arrest warrant. The alleged incident involved De Blasi removing his department-issued firearm from its holster while in the PD briefing room and pointing it at another officer.
Dang.
The statement said that it had separated employment from the allegedly trigger-happy officer. He was placed on administrative leave immediately following the incident while investigations were conducted, and then I think they let him go. The incident does not reflect the values demonstrated by the men and women of the Myrtle Beach Police Department every day. However, it does demonstrate our commitment to accountability and our willingness to address conduct that falls short of our expectations. Okay, are you talking about the conduct from the person who put the fish in the microwave? Because I'm telling you, HR needs to address that.
Yeah.
Maybe don't fire that person, but have a conversation and put it in their file. You're not...
You can't,
no fish in the microwave.
You can't be doing that, Fred. I mean, you can tell it's here when someone's put something, and it doesn't have to be fish, but even on the edge, fish-ish, you know, in that same category, and you're like, this isn't...
That's almost justifiable.
Yeah, it's just not good.
We've had those. We haven't had one in a while, though,
Have you ever worked with anybody who ate hard-boiled eggs in the studio as a breakfast thing?
No. Is that kind of gross?
Yeah, it doesn't smell good either.
Really?
When they open the container?
Oh, no, I can believe that. Yeah, I can believe that.
It's
for
bad
sure.
news.
So have you heard, Sue, and Fred, I know you've talked about this, and we've talked about it a little bit.
Yeah,
plus
sorry.
What?
Mackerel.
Oh, yeah. All right. That's worse. You hear about the Black Crowes controversy?
No, what is it?
Okay, I don't really understand why this happened, but let me explain it best that I can. They had a show in Tampa, and Chris Robinson, Black Crowes singer, reacted because the crowd, after seeing the band's Black Crow character on the big screen dressed as Uncle Sam, they started a chant of USA, USA.
Okay.
Right? That's apparently offensive to Chris Robinson because he went off on them chanting USA, USA,
what?
USA. Yeah, listen.
Some of us have real faith. For those of you booing us, some of us are not afraid. And we most assuredly are not ignorant. So, thank you.
So, he...
Wait,
at one point,
I'm confused.
I am too. So, the band goes on. They're chanting USA. He apparently thinks that it's related to Trump. I don't know. He says, thanks for the geography lesson. I don't know what you have to be so proud of right now. So the crowd booed, and that's when he said, and Ethan, by the way, looked for more audio. There's not a lot of audio on this available, unfortunately. And then he goes, for those of you effing booing us, some of us are not afraid, and we most assuredly are not ignorant. I think maybe you are. So a bunch of people, look, you saw the video of this. They walked out of the show. And, you know, the tour continues, but this is interesting. Why in the world would you make that a moment at your rock show when people are simply, and I would probably gather a lot of those people that were chanting USA, USA, they weren't doing it because of Trump. They were just chanting USA because they're proud of the country, but you can't be proud of the country because of who the president is.
Yeah, well,
so I don't really understand it. It's confusing to me that was a, you know, a move that they decided to make. And, you know, look, bands are choosing their lanes. The E Street Band is doing it right now. And, you know, I think they've alienated at least 30% of their audience. But I don't think they care. You know, like Bruce doesn't care because he sold the catalog for $400 million. Yep. And now he feels, not unlike Scott Pelley, that he can be a martyr for the cause. And that's coming from someone who's been a fan of his since 1981.
Yeah. Where are the Black Crowes from?
Well, oh, where are they from originally? I think Florida, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know. That's just a guess, but the Robinson Brothers, right? I feel Florida.
From Atlanta.
That was close, like south, but yeah. I don't know. It was kind of bizarre. Okay, one sports story that I wanted to touch on, mainly, actually two. Mainly one is because it's just selfish. Ethan gave me some terrible news. You know, I'm a Packers fan, and the Packers traded for Micah Parsons last year, got him from the Cowboys, and he's one of the best, if not the best, pass rushers, defensive ends in the NFL, and he got hurt late in the season. And now they're saying, and Adam Schefter is reporting this, that he might not be back until mid-October. So that's like maybe even 2 months into the season. So that's not good. I just pass that along because I'm not happy about it. There was a piece this morning. You guys tell me if this is something that, you know, I should even worry about or be upset about, but it didn't make any sense. So this is something else that came up last night with my friend at the game. So you haven't been to, have you ever been to Columbia?
Yes.
Okay. They are building and they have been renovating our football stadium for years, ever since we, you know, joined the SEC, improvement after improvement. You know that on the north end zone, Sue, you probably even know this. You don't have to know Mizzou too much. They have that big M and people would sit on the rocks and stuff like that.
Right.
So that they're going to keep a little baby version of that, but they have renovated the entire north end zone. And if you were at any games last year, it just seemed weird because there was a lot of construction going on. But you can also see what the, you know, what the potential was for the project. So when I was talking to my friend Ken last night, who does some, you know, does some work with some of the folks, I said, hey, how is that, you know, how is that going? You know, what's the project look like? Have you seen it? And he hadn't, but he said, I think they're going to be ready for, you know, for the fall. And I was very encouraged by that. So coincidentally, I went on to the STL Today. Well, I mean, I do this all the time when I'm doing the show prep, but I'm on STL Today in their sports section today. And this guy, Eli Hoff, who is the beat writer for the Tigers, here's the headline. I'm like, wow, this is cool, because I was just asking about this. After Mizzou completes football stadium renovation, what project will come next? And they say, before Mizzou football coach Eli Drinkwitz teed off alongside dozens of fans and donors at the St. Louis Tigers Club golf tournament earlier this week with Senator Schmidt. Senator Schmidt was there. Coach Drink was there. He offered something of a teaser for the school's newest sports landmark. Y'all going to be stunned when y'all see the north end zone. And they kind of go into the background of this and how it was a $250 million renovation. But I'm reading the whole story here. And I'm thinking, you know what would be nice to have in a story like this? I'll do the quiz again because you knocked it out of the park with fish in the microwave. What would be awesome to maybe in a newspaper story about the North End Zone being completed might be, I mean, just a little helpful.
When? How much did it cost?
How about a picture?
Oh.
How about a picture of the North End Zone, which is nowhere to be seen? What? How could you do a story? I guess they want to keep it a surprise. David Amelotti guy from Channel 4 that I've gotten to know, good investigative journalist, he goes out there by himself and he shoots the drone up and takes pictures of things when he does his story. Why can't they do that at the Post-Dispatch? I mean, hell, they print the damn thing in Columbia, Missouri. They could actually have a real photographer deliver some, you know, what do they call those things from film? What am I thinking about? Like when you would shoot film out of a camera, not digital, you'd have the negatives.
Yeah, the negatives.
Sorry, Sue, I didn't mean to throw you off completely. But they could probably even deliver negatives from a real camera over to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and put it in print. It just didn't make any sense to me. Why would you do a story
odd.
And not have...
No, like, it's odd.
I got an idea. If you don't want to show us the newly completed North End Zone, show us the construction underway North End Zone so we have an image. But they wouldn't do that. It's too easy. And you wonder why people aren't subscribing to that newspaper. It's so confusing.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? MaintainX is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With MaintainX, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback.
What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try MaintainX for free today. Go to MaintainX.com/AI. That's Maintain and the letter X.com/AI.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Well, it is National Egg Day, which you don't want to eat hard-boiled in the studio.
We found that out.
Mm-hmm. It's also National Repeat Day. If you do something good,
that?
Do it twice. Oh, thank you.
What,
that's National Repeat Day.
Is it like specific to television shows?
I don't know.
Like that?
I looked it up, and even the explanation made no sense to me.
Who decides these things?
I don't know. I think you could just buy it. We ought to buy or somehow submit ourselves for the Mark Reardon Show Day.
I wonder
if you could.
Let's give it a try.
Oh, my gosh. I'll see if... Okay, I'll look into that.
We probably have better luck doing that at the state level.
You know, well, that's a good point.
With a proclamation or something like that.
I've
never had a proclamation. Some people have had proclamations.
Have you had
before.
A proclamation, Fred?
Fred has.
No.
Didn't you get one when you got the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
No. I thought the mayor did something for you.
No.
No?
I don't think so.
Was it a proclamation here? Well, I thought you had something.
Yeah, I did too.
Maybe
no,
I don't know. I don't remember.
On this day in history, 80 years ago, in 1946, Jacques M., a French fashion designer, debuted a two-piece bathing suit in Paris, named it the Bikini. After the Bikini Atoll Islands in the South Pacific, where the atomic bomb testing was going on, he chose the name because he thought the bikini was so scandalous that people would react to it the way it would be like dropping a bomb. Wow.
I mean, it's a perfect name.
It is.
You can't go back and think anything else would be better with that name. And that was a game changer. It's a game changer for a lot of us, especially those who didn't wear them.
Well, that's probably true.
Yes.
And 56 years ago today, in 1970, Ray Davies of the Kinks flew from New York to London to change one word in the recording of Lola. Coca-Cola. This is the original version.
I met her in a club down in Old Soho, where you drink champagne and it tastes like Coca-Cola. C-O-L-A Cola.
Okay.
All right, so
was
there a copyright thing there?
Yeah, well, the BBC said, oh, no. You cannot do commercial references in songs, so you have to fly over here and change it, and here's what it became.
Oh, my goodness. So that's the next one I have in here? All right, here we go. A little slower pace, too.
It's live.
There you go.
I met her in a club down in Old Soho, where you drink champagne, and it tastes just like cherry cola. C-O-L-A cola.
So can you find both versions, like when you go to your music service or something like that?
I went to YouTube.
Okay.
Because I didn't know whether they would have both in there. And this one is a live performance somewhere, but they sound good, don't they,
really
for
good.
A live performance?
You know, who was it that recently ripped on the Kinks and Lola? Let me look this up.
Oh, probably because of the lyrics.
Yeah, because
lyrics.
Of the, like, the whole transit was ridiculous that somebody made like a big deal out of this recently. And I can't remember who it was.
I can't either, but they did make a big deal out of it.
Yeah, there was some other rock star that said, I'm like, shut up.
But another rock star did shut up.
Or was it one of the Davies? That's the thing. I can't remember what happened. I'm trying to
It's not you. It's not your problem. Move on. All right, speaking of soda, Crumble Cookie Company just dropped a dirty soda with a jaw-dropping, are you ready? 186 grams of sugar in one serving. That is nearly a half pound. That's the same as five cans of Coke.
I love it.
That is awful.
You know, they have one of those at Busch Stadium, too.
Yeah.
Oh, that is more sugar than some people, probably that I consume over a week. That is nuts.
Yeah, that might be even
possibly
more than
2 weeks.
I consume a lot of sugar, but that might even be more than I consume
yes,
a week.
Yes, and one yeah. thing.
By
that
way,
is not good.
It was Moby who ripped on them and said, Lola by the Kinks came up on a Spotify playlist. I thought the lyrics were gross and transphobic. Shut up. Okay,
why
just
even say
up.
That? Just because, go away.
And nobody cares about you anymore, Moby, anyway.
I think
right?
that's why he says
yeah,
these
probably.
Things. Probably. Uber, but you know I love these. Uber released its 10th annual Lost and Found Index. Oh, some of my favorites. Okay, it's the usual. This is what you've people have left behind in the rideshares. Phone, wallet, luggage, keys, headphones. Oh, now let's get to it.
Yeah, please.
And the odd stuff of the what was left in the Ubers last year. Number one, an ankle monitor, 420 donuts, a sack of marbles, a brand new mini fridge, live fish, two trees. What? A textured photo with a rhinestone picture of Jesus. A portable thermal printer. A dishwasher.
A two dishwasher?
Wedding gowns. Not one. Two. And a meat slicer. There you have it. This is what people leave behind.
And do
in
they
the Ubers.
Do they ever get them back?
See, that's just it. What do you do? Like, you know, when your luggage is lost on the airlines and nobody claims it, you know, we've talked about this. They have a store where they put it and you can go and buy stuff. Have you ever been to that, Fred?
No.
I wonder if you could go there online and bid on things. But you can go there and purchase. I don't know, because Uber, there is no one Uber location. We're all over the place. And if I find, like, a meat slicer in my Uber, do I just email Uber corporate and say, okay, put this one on the weird list? I don't know.
Can I tell you something
yes.
really, really funny right now? That you literally just reminded me that I took an Uber trip in Las Vegas. I had to take one from the airport to my friend's house because he was working, right? I pulled up my app because I had this moment of panic. I'm like, I don't think I ever tipped that dude. And sure enough, it comes up because I never opened the app
well,
again.
Yeah.
Once I got there, I didn't take another Uber the whole weekend. But William just got a tip because I didn't tip him. I'm like, I don't think I tipped the guy. So I felt bad about that. Anyway, thank you. William thanks you more
yes.
than anyone else.
You're welcome.
It was $5.41. So.
Just now you tipped him
yeah, because,
like a week later? That's
great. Well, because
great.
The first thing that comes up on the app is the tip. Like, yeah. had I opened yeah. the app right after the ride or another ride, I would have seen that, but I haven't opened the app. So William thanks you. And William
you're
was
welcome,
cool.
William.
I liked him, too.
Aw. Well, he's been wondering.
I know he has. He's like, that damn guy from St. Louis, that radio guy, stiffed me.
Oh, my gosh. He's been bad-mouthing St. Louis and
for
tipping
weeks,
for weeks.
10 days at least,
okay.
yes.
Now, this is something that I actually, okay. A new poll has asked people, what is the first day of the week? And people are split on this. Fred, what to you is the first day of the week?
I would consider Monday to be the first day.
Well, that's what I think too, Mark.
Monday?
Yeah.
The weekend.
Yes, agreed. 54% of Americans said Monday. But 45% said Sunday.
Who are these people?
And they say it's possibly because calendars
yeah.
in the U.S. usually start with Sunday. Well, I think that's weird.
I think it's weird, too. But the calendar thing always, you know, kind of, I think, trips people up. But no, it's Monday. The start of the week is Monday. How many percentage? 44% of Americans can think. That'll show you how we are divided, right? Right
yes.
there. You can't even call something what it is, right?
Yes. To me, it's clear. And you know how in your head you have how the weekdays go? Like when someone says to you Tuesday, what does it look like in your brain?
Yeah.
You know how, and my loop goes around and that's over there and then Monday is the beginning. Mm-hmm. I don't look at calendars and
no.
go, oh, well, they say Sunday.
No, exactly.
Okay. Well, then we agree with that. 1% said, I don't know, another day? You know, I hate those people.
Saturday. Okay. Set Friday.
It's Friday.
And there's a quick story about new research showing that mosquitoes can now learn to become attracted to DEET, one of the most common repellents. It still works for now, but But experts say if you overuse it, it could make it less effective.
Yeah, they get, you know, they outsmart this stuff.
How does that happen? Weeds, is it just evolution?
Weeds do the same thing. You know, like I tell you, you used to walk soybean fields. Monsanto comes in, kills all the weeds.
Yes.
The weeds outsmart the product and they start growing anyway. It's crazy.
Ugh, I find that annoying too. And finally, at Sue's News, we have today's random fact, and it is random. The songwriters, who happen to be Al Green and Teeny Hodges, between the 1974 hit Take Me to the River, earned more royalties from the use of the song by Big Mouth Billy Bass than from any other artist who covered the track.
That's crazy. I believe that, though. Honestly, that's something that seems to make sense. We're coming back with Jim Talent.
Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork. But somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule. Automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole-body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Former United States Senator from Missouri, Jim Talent, foreign policy expert extraordinaire, is with us this afternoon. Hey, I got your and our mutual friend, Duane Patterson, coming up after 5 o'clock tonight. How about that? A little back-to-back here.
There's a real expert. I mean, I'm going to tell you, Duane, for a guy who's never actually, like, formally handled those issues, he sure knows a lot.
I love him. You know, it's funny about him, and I don't really often say this, because to me, Duane is the guy that writes at hotair.com, and, you know, he's become a regular staple of my show. But I did not know he is Hugh Hewitt's Fred Bottomer. He's Hugh's executive producer. So he's got a Rolodex that would parallel Fred. He's a great guy, and I love his opinion. So we really have a great time on the radio, and he speaks fondly of you, Jim. I know that. But let's get to some of the issues here. And, you know, it's funny because maybe not so funny. The last few radio shows that I've done this week, I haven't really talked about Iran. There's been these other things. You know, we had the jungle primary. You have some of the other primaries. You got Graham Plattner, all this stuff. So where would you say that we are right now? Because the ceasefire, I guess it's holding, although I saw that Iran may have launched some missiles today. So maybe just give us a point of where you interpret this whole situation is right now.
Yeah, I think the president said today, ask him about the Iran shooting. He says, well, a ceasefire in that region means only a moderate level of violence. Something like that. Yeah. It was funny. You know, I'm glad you asked me, because I really think context here. I intended to give the context. Okay, so 2 years ago, the Islamic Republic controlled Syria through Bashar Assad, Lebanon through Hezbollah, Gaza through Hamas, and large parts of Yemen through the Houthis. They also had a very considerable arsenal of ballistic and cruise missiles, an active nuclear program. They were close to weaponizing a nuclear status. And they had a very vital military industrial base. And they were a major, major deadly threat to the United States and our interests in the region. And they don't have any of those things anymore. The threat has been reduced to a level. This is really important context. It's been reduced to the level of a manageable problem. Now, we'd all like the problem to go away. That could happen because they're also at a weak point at home. And I think But I think what the president is doing is transitioning to a policy where we constrain them and continue to punish them using economic power and diplomatic leadership. And I think that's what these negotiations are designed to achieve. Either we're going to get the baseline that Rubio talked about today, which is them opening up the strait and then phase two discussion of the nuclear, of the enriched uranium they supposedly have. Or I think we'll go back to kinetic action, which has to include at that point, I think, forcing the strait open. That's what I've been waiting for, Mark, as you know, I think I've mentioned on the show before. But so that it's going to be one of those two things, I believe. And we'll see. Supposedly, according to the president, they are at least in the range of an acceptable deal. We'll see what happens.
So the president confirmed that he criticized Bibi during this phone conversation on Monday, saying that he was, quote, a little bit perturbed that Israel's military actions against Hezbollah in Lebanon were complicating the efforts to, you know, get a deal done. Netanyahu said in an interview with CNBC that he and the president occasionally have tactical disagreements, but remain aligned. So what are the tactical disagreements? And I guess that kind of goes to the issue of how, and he even said this, Bibi said, it's an open question on how the war should end.
Yeah. Well, I suppose the people who think Israel controls Donald Trump were probably nonplussed by that phone call, right?
Yeah, that's interesting. You're right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, they're on a level of tactical or second or third tier issues where there is occasionally tension between Israel's interests and our interests. And this is one of them. Now, Rubio said today that we consider the issues with Iran to be separate from Israel's issues with what remains of Hezbollah in Lebanon. And that is our official policy. What I suspect is the president would like, he's not going to keep Israel from doing what they are going to do, which is disarm Hezbollah if the Lebanese government doesn't do it. Okay, but I think what the president was saying to him is, do you have to do this right now? I mean, you know, let us get this agreement if we can get the agreement, and then you can go back to doing this. But I would be very, very surprised if the president attempts to prevent Israel in the intermediate term from protecting its borders. And I don't think Netanyahu, he can't have a situation where northern Israel's under constant attack from Hezbollah.
So the president also confirmed that he called Bibi crazy in that phone call on Monday. But the other thing that jumps out here is the timeline is getting, you know, expanded again. He actually now is remaining noncommittal about something that would, you know, set a deadline for settling the conflict, and even said that the strait might be blocked through Labor Day. That's in September. That's very close to November in the midterms. Obviously,
right,
this is not just about politics. The president's made that clear. He's committed to ensuring that they don't ever have a nuclear bomb. But, Jim, the reality is the reality, and this stuff is getting way, way out there longer than I think people expected it to. And I, by the way, sense that some of the support is dropping off in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the politics are a lesser reason, but a reason why I'm wondering why we don't open up the strait.
Right.
Okay, so that's what I think. That's the answer to this. We're not going to leave Iran in they're not in control, but we're not going to leave the Iranian threat big enough or perceived as big enough to keep bottling up the strait. Now, we are moving some ships out. Evidently, CENTCOM has confirmed that like 70 ships have gone out. They move out through the southern part of the strait. That's where we cleared a corridor for Project Freedom. So, no, I would agree with you. Now, on the other hand, you know, when you're in negotiations, what you don't want to do is make the other guy think that you need a deal.
Yeah,
so if you say, oh, yes, we have to have this in the next 8 days or something like that, then you've given leverage to them. And Trump, you know, in his DNA, he understands negotiations. So that's probably why he's saying that. I would be very surprised if this goes on that long, though. I think we're going to have to do something militarily, and we're going to have to open up the strait. I mean, I could be surprised, but I've been looking for that for some weeks.
So, you know, they opened – one of the things that was kind of curious about last week is the internet was – I don't know, completely open, but they had shut it down quite a bit in the country, and I think it was open. I don't know if there's been any effect of that. We know that the blockade has been very effective, and, you know, there's economic pain and pressure, but they also seem, I mean, My perspective is the Iranian regime, whoever it is that we're dealing with, right? They don't really care. I mean, wouldn't they be incentivized to kind of run the clock out on Trump?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it depends on how bad they actually are being hurt. Now, the reports I read indicate, and this is just common sense to me, that their oil exports are down about 94%, and that is how they get all their revenue. So they're hurting right now. And they did open up the internet, and that's another question I'd like answers. Why did they do that? And I suspect that a signal was sent that a good faith gesture like that would be much appreciated mm-hmm. by the United States, because right. I can't think of any other reason they would have opened it up, particularly at this time. So, in this sense, it's sort of like we're throttling them. They're hurting or imposing costs on, in particular, Asia, but also to some degree here, by threatening the Strait. So again, Mark, I don't want to sound like Johnny One Note. The answer to this is to present them with a situation where we will open up the Strait and then we will also continue the blockade. So they lose and we don't. And I got to believe.
We go back, though. Here's the thing. We go back to April 7th with the original ceasefire, and then he claimed that the Iranians had agreed to open the Strait. Now, we're 2 months later here, and there's no opening of the Strait. So, you know, mm-hmm. some of the things that are coming from the administration, too. And, of course, I thought, because Trump's the kind of guy that does what he says, I'm shocked that there has not been more military action. I really am.
I am surprised as well that this has gone on this long. What he will say, of course, is he thinks we're very close to a deal. There are things here, in my opinion, that we don't know. When they started up, well, there's a lot we don't know, but there's some key things. When we started Operation Project Freedom and then stopped it after 24 hours, I have speculated that's because the Saudis and the Gulf states are afraid of attacks on their infrastructure. Okay, fine. So now we take another crack at negotiations and we give it a reasonable amount of time. That doesn't work. And then we just tell them, put your big boy pants on. We'll defend you. The Israelis will defend you. We're going in and we're going to open up the Strait. And that would include, by the way, a whole lot of kinetic action against on the coastline. We're going to blow up a lot of things as we're opening up the Strait. So I keep looking for it, Mark. Look, I've said all along, the president, I think, has earned our trust because of his maneuvering and foreign policy. That doesn't mean that he's going to be immune from legitimate criticism if this doesn't work. So we'll see. But look, I'm looking for the same thing you are, which is time to apply the hammer to get them to agree to something that's reasonable.
Jim Talent, always great to have you on. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. And I'll say hi to Dwayne for you here in a couple of minutes.
Yeah, please do.
All right. Thank you, Jim.
I wouldn't say angry. I was a little bit perturbed at his constantly fighting with Lebanon. You know, at some point, I said, maybe we got to stop this. We got to stop it.
I don't know why there was that horn in the background. I'm not sure. But that was the president. And he did call, I guess, Bibi crazy the other day on that call. He did an interview with Miranda Devine. And this is what he said about Iran.
We can't let them have a nuclear weapon. And they've already agreed they're not going to have a nuclear weapon.
Have that?
Oh, yeah. They've agreed to that. I mean, now they can change their mind. But that was one of the things they had to agree. They've agreed to that. That was the big thing.
Okay, then one of the questions is, who's in charge, right? Is it the Supreme Leader, son? Well, the Supreme Leader was taken out. Is it his son?
Who's making the decisions?
Well, they say he is giving approval because that's the way it has been for a long, long time. Mm. His father and then him, I guess it's a succession. But we seem to be getting along quite well.
Would you like to meet him or meet any of the Iranians in person?
I've never thought of it, actually. It's a very good question. I'll think of it. Yeah, I'd like to meet him. I'd like to meet everybody. I'd like to meet him. We probably will meet at some point, depending on how it all works out.
I'm not so sure about that. And then, you know, the question is still out there, because I think there's a fair amount of people that would tell you that the only way to get the enriched uranium is by going in and taking it, whether it's special forces that Bibi has or that we have. So will there be troops on the ground?
Can you do it just with bombing? The other way?
Yeah, you don't have to. We don't need boots on the ground now. Well, we did it. You know, we wiped out much of their military with just bombing. We didn't put anybody on the ground. You don't want to do that. You're so far away. Mm. you don't want to do that if you can avoid it.
So Miranda has some hum in the background of her interview, so that's what that horn is. The Scott Pelley story has gotten even more interesting since I have gotten on the air this afternoon.
Oh, really?
Because now he's talking and he's trying to fire back, and there was a meeting. And, you know, I don't know how these executives deal with this, but people are always recording these things, right? So they're recording the meetings. So Barry addressed, because it was the new executive producer who fired him last night and sent the, the termination notice and the letter. And I read that earlier. Barry addressed Scott Pelley's termination on a morning call today. And I don't have the audio, but I do have the transcript, which says, "I know I speak for myself, and I hope I speak for everyone here when I say that I'm only interested in working in a newsroom that is built on trust and mutual respect. We cannot do our work without it. That foundation was broken on Monday, and despite our attempts to engage with Scott Pelley and to find a way back, unfortunately, we weren't able to do so, so we had to part ways. We did not want that to happen, but that's the path he chose. That unfortunate outcome does not discount from the amazing contributions and work that Scott Pelley has done for CBS and for 60 Minutes on over the course of you know, his career." Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. That's what I'd say about that. But here's the thing. This is so funny. Really, if you're anyone out there, and I think that would be most of the listeners who have followed any of this and, you know, followed me over the years talking about media bias, you're aware of how the bias is, you know, injected and indoctrinated into, you know, younger journalists in particular. So this makes me laugh so much. He says that the network's new executives were silencing employees, and he claims that they instructed him. This is my favorite line. This one will kind of make you laugh, I think. It's going to make Kenny Wallace laugh in a second. They instructed him to inject falsehoods and bias into his reporting.
What?
Wait, right? That is exactly what your job has been. That's exactly what you've been doing at 60 Minutes. Maybe not on every story, but you've been injecting falsehoods and bias into your reporting. And they just don't get this. It is unbelievable. He says, "When stewardship of the program passed to my colleagues and me, our responsibility was to expand energetically into a new age of media technology while preserving the values our audience expects. Now the new owner of the network is casting this legend aside, apparently to curry a moment of favor with the Trump administration."
What?
I mean, Barry Weiss is not a conservative.
No.
And by the way, the Free Press has been highly critical in calling balls and strikes of Trump when they need to be. They have a column that's up right now talking about some of the things that me and Senator Talent were just discussing about Trump and some of the mystery. But, you know, they think that they're Scott Pelley, Sharon Fonsi, the people behind the scenes, Bill Owens, the people that resigned earlier, they think that they're bigger than all of this. And they don't, you know, this is what I asked. And by the way, I got a response. I'll do this after the year. I sent this message to my former Mizzou J School professor, Stacey Wolfel, who writes on Substack, and he wrote about how, you know, you should stop watching 60 Minutes and all this stuff with trust. And I laid out the whole Bill Whitaker thing. I'm not going to repeat it here from St. Louis and what they did. I can't trust 60 Minutes because no. I know what they told
right.
the country about St. Louis, which was falsehoods and bias.
Yes.
And that, by the way, that's even more egregious because I knew that they were doing the story on Kim Gardner, and I made every effort through the channels that I had, and they were communicated, believe me, to get them to interview Jane.
Yes.
Or a Democrat.
Yes.
Somebody, don't talk to me, conservative, Nazi, right. evil conservative talk show host. But there was no effort to do that. So when you, and this is what they did with Kim Gardner, and this is what they do with all the stories. There was no investigative journalism. Are you kidding me? There was a, we know what the narrative is. Yeah. St. Louis is racist. They don't want this person to succeed in the era of George Floyd because they're a bunch of racist hicks in the Midwest. And we're going to show the rest of the country and put Kim Gardner up at the front of this, telling people that she's just trying to do her job and help people when she was doing nothing of the sort. And by the way, that was completely vindicated.
I mean,
everybody knows at this point the true story of Kim Gardner. There's no correct. And you can still go on Paramount Plus, pull that episode up of 60 Minutes. And I challenged my former professor. I said, you watch that piece and you tell me if that's journalism or journalistic malpractice. It's journalistic malpractice.
Of course it is. P.S. She was elected. What, did we just then become racist afterwards?
Well, right. Exactly.
None of it makes sense.
No, it doesn't make sense because, well, to my point and your point, there were Democrats that were screaming at the top of their lungs. Now, not a lot of black Democrats at first, but they also came on
yes,
board.
They did.
Look, even Tashara finally said enough is enough. She had to. That was a political choice, but she broke bad on her. Was there a effort to come back in with Bill Whitaker, 60 Minutes legend, right? And this whole thing, this also aggravates me because someone in their comments said, maybe it was Pelly, that, you know, what would Mike Wallace think of all this? I actually think Mike Wallace would say, what are your Snowflake's problems? Ask some questions. Be tough on both sides. You want to be tough on Marco Rubio and Trump and all that? That's fine. But you're never tough on anyone else.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Your line just went down. Production stopped. A supervisor wants answers. And someone's digging through a binder for the maintenance history. Every one of those minutes costs money. And most of the time, that breakdown could have been prevented. That's where MaintainX comes in. MaintainX catches the failure before it happens. Preventative maintenance plans on every key asset to improve reliability. Work orders assigned and tracked right from your phone. Everyone from the floor to the front office is in the loop. Companies on MaintainX have cut unplanned downtime by over 30% and saved thousands on parts and labor every year. See what MaintainX can do for your operation. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a brand new show. It's called Money Moves. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.